should I even ask that question? Is that going to be a stupid question to ask, you know? And we just did. Ollie just braved it up and said, is there any chance that she could lose her leg? And we were really expecting him to say, not at all. And he said, yeah, possibly.
Wow.
That just knocked us for six, because that was a completely different other level.
The resilience of a child. How often have we heard this phrase? Kiltullis Saoirse Ruaidhne has taken it to a whole new stratosphere. This brave young lady and her wonderful family have been through hell and back. From a sore leg to cancer diagnosis and chemo to amputation, the Ruaidhnes faced it all with determination and love. Now 10 years old, she walks, runs, cycles and plays camogie. What next? Listen to Rosanna, Saoirse's mama, and the lady herself as they share their story.
Hi everybody, and you're very welcome to the podcast. I'm sitting here with Rosanna Ruaidhne in Kiltulla. Rosanna is Saoirse's mom, Saoirse Ruaidhne, and she's, I suppose, at this stage, she's known nationally because of the Late Late toy show appeal and so much more. And of course, her world, along with her family's world, were turned upside down in 2019. We'll speak about that over the next little while. But I'll have a chat with you first, Rosanna. And then we'll bring Saoirse into the conversation over the next little while. Thanks to yourself, of course, and to Ollie and to Saoirse and Farrah Rose for inviting me into your home. Thanks a lot.
You're very welcome. It's great to have you.
First of all, let's go back a little bit and talk about the Ruaidhne family before 2019. Yourself, Ollie, and little Saoirse at the time. Tell us about family before 2019 and your world being turned upside down.
We actually were having a really busy year before things changed. Farrah Rose, who was long awaited, I think we were 7 years waiting to have her, and we were very successful, thankfully, with fertility treatment. She was given to us on the 1st of January 2019, New Year's Day. So we started off the year on such a high. It was amazing. She was busy, like, you know, she didn't settle quickly. She had intolerances and it took a few months to figure all of that out. So it was a difficult few months, but all was good. We were all very happy and Saoirse was delighted to have a little sister. And then I, of course, was heading back to work in September. So I was kind of preparing for that. I just started in a job. I transferred to Ballinasloe. I work with the HSE and I was only there about 12 weeks. I'd really kind of settled in when everything kind of changed.
So tell me, first of all, what were the symptoms? How did it turn around that you had to go to maybe the doctor and eventually the diagnosis? What happened there?
Saoirse just came home from school one day and, you know, it wasn't anything too serious. She was kind of saying, she was limping a little bit and saying, oh, my ankle is at me. They were doing tennis with a tennis coach and he had just said, put a bit of ice on it. We didn't really give her too much heed. We thought she might be looking for a little bit more attention because of Farrah Rose. After a couple of days, it wasn't getting any better. And we decided I'd bring her into the GP before school on the Friday morning. And it was the Friday of the toy show 2019. So I brought her into the GP. He had a look at it. And straight away, he kind of said to me, he wanted me to feel her leg. It was warm. And I just knew by him that that was unusual. But I didn't read too much more into it. He was fine. You know, he just said, you know, I'm going to refer you for an X-ray. But, you know, he said, even if you don't get in till Monday, that's fine. But he did say, you might come back to me and let me know how you got on. So, as it turned out anyway, Ollie was the one that ended up bringing her in because Farrah's had an ear infection. So he brought her in and she came home that night and we all sat down to watch the toy show with what we thought Saoirse had was a broken leg.
Okay.
And we were awful upset about that because neither myself and Ollie had ever really broken anything too serious. I hadn't broken anything and I suppose it was a bit traumatizing for her. She was very upset. She had crutches and we were to present back in Merlin on the Monday to get a proper cast on. So we just kind of sit down thinking, God, how did this happen now? And this is kind of inconvenient. But the next day, you know, someone came into the house, a friend, and they, you know, they were kind of like, you know, it could have been a lot worse. And we were saying, exactly, yeah, you know, it's a break. We can deal with that. So that was fine. We were going to Mass on the Sunday morning, 2 days later after she'd presented to A&E. And we got this phone call out of the blue from a girl on the team, which I'll go into in a minute. And, you know, she just kind of basically said, we're looking at the x-rays here and we want to rule out a few abnormalities. And they did mention something about a shadow, and shadow rang true for me because I'm not sure if you're aware, Ollie had cancer.
Oh, I never knew that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So myself and Ollie met in 2006, and we were about 20 months together when we got engaged, and we were preparing for our wedding, and it was the 17th of April 2008 when he went into the Galway clinic and they said, yeah, you have testicular cancer and you don't let the sun go down twice on it. They said, go home and pack a bag, tell your family and come back in. And so that was my first real, I suppose, experience of cancer with somebody that close to me. So when they had said shadow, I kind of thought, isn't that a reference to cancer? Hmm. So that kind of set in the back of my head. But I thought, don't be silly. You know, geez, that's silly, like, you know, don't be reading into it. So we went into, they asked us to come in anyway for tests, and we must have got in there around 11 o'clock. We were there all day. They ran all these different bloods. We didn't get to see anyone, and that evening they decided to keep her for an MRI the following morning. And I asked the nurse, were we going to see a consultant or anyone at that stage? And she said, not at this stage this evening. She said, you'll meet with them in the morning. So I was a bit, you know, I suppose I was a bit deflated because I kind of, I suppose I wanted to ask questions at that stage.
Yeah.
So we headed up to pediatrics, and that was kind of where it all went. That's where we kind of started to really begin to see that there was something serious going on, because the team were on the corridor. Dr. Frank Shannon, who is such a lovely man, and one of the girls on his team turned around and introduced themselves to us. This is 6 o'clock on a Sunday evening. And I thought that very strange. Why are they here on a Sunday evening? And, you know, I thought this is going to wait till the morning. But he brought Saoirse in and he examined her, and there was a lot of people around. There was a lot of nurses, a lot of people standing around. And he was so lovely to Saoirse, you know, he's chatting her and asking her, did she have a fall and did she injure playing camogie? And I suppose just trying to, I don't know, I thought he was still trying to get to the bottom of it.
Yeah, of course.
But
yeah,
he was probably just trying to kind of get chatting to her and make her feel more comfortable. And then he just, in a lovely way, he, without trying to startle her, he kind of invited us out of the room and into another room. And I, you know, we just knew when you're being brought away like that, you just know something's going to be said to you now that can't be said in front of her. So that was playing in my mind. And Pharaoh's is only 11 months. I was feeding her a bottle, and one of the nurses just took the bottle and took Pharaoh's, and it was just so easy and all so smooth. And we went down the corridor, and before we went into the office, I remember catching Ollie's pocket of his jeans and pulling him back. You know, I'll never forget that, because I just didn't want to go any further. You know, you just got that fear or that feeling.
Yeah, but it was probably too much too fast as well. A whirlwind was happening, and you still hadn't been given the answers,
No.
I'm sure you were on a whirlwind at the
time.
Yeah,
it's so hard to explain. It's nearly like you're watching a drama on TV and the suspense is building and you know something's going to happen, but you don't have the script and you don't know what's going to happen, but you still know.
Yeah.
So he set us down. There was two members of staff in the room, and he explained what they'd been doing all day, and he was lovely. He was very, very, very good and very patient with us. And then really, I suppose, he just explained that they were either looking at a infection or a tumour.
Okay.
And that's, you know, where it was like, what?
Yeah, yeah. Because obviously you kind of think with an infection, okay, we can kind of deal with this.
Mm.
An infection is something that could probably be dealt with possibly with an antibiotic or something like that.
Yeah.
And then a tumour is a completely different animal entirely.
Completely.
Right. So from there, then obviously you probably had to have the agonising wait, as everybody does.
Mm.
And when did the dreaded news eventually come?
I think we both kind of knew leaving that evening that
it was an infection.
It wasn't an infection, but yet they couldn't say that it wasn't because we had to have a biopsy. So we were sent home that night and we were to come back in for the MRI. They let her home anyway in the end, which that's where we wanted her. We wanted her with us. And like we came home and we weren't even able to speak. And we went back in the next morning for the MRI and Frank Shannon came down to me and he was so lovely and he said, you know, you need to get up to Dublin tonight. Have you somewhere to stay? And it's just like, you know,
yeah,
you know, come on, we're ticking boxes here now. And she was in having her MRI at this stage and she was to have the biopsy on the Tuesday morning. So we were just, it was like no one had told us anything, but we were living like our heads were hanging and it was like this complete depression had come over us. It was just very, very different. And yet we were able to carry on and get things done and get moving. And we travelled to Dublin and they did the biopsy and they weren't meant to give us any results. They said it would be, you know, however long, a week or so. But there and then after she had it, the one of the doctors brought us into a room and said, you know, what we're seeing, you know, to us it looks aggressive.
Okay.
Now, the senior doctor came in then and had another conversation with us and said, look, we're still waiting for the report and hematology have had a quick look and they don't like what they're seeing. And we can see it's aggressive and it's malignant. So they had more or less then told us there and then that this is, you know, that this is a tumour that we were dealing with.
And bear in mind, through all of this, we're dealing with a 7-year-old child.
Yeah.
So you're dealing with the mentality of a 7-year-old child trying to explain all these things to the child as things were moving on. And you can well imagine being inquisitive, as she is and every child is, trying to answer these questions.
Yeah.
We didn't, as a parent, how do you do that?
Well, we couldn't tell her anything. Like, we just kept saying they're trying to figure out what's wrong. And even when she had the biopsy, she didn't know that it was a biopsy. You know, we tried to hide it from her. Like there was so much more involved with her. You know, she was so nervous and so scared about going down to theatre. So there was pre-meds given to her to calm her down. And then, of course, obviously she was sedated. But we didn't focus too much on the site where the biopsy was taken from after it. You know, she didn't really notice. She was on great pain relief. So we just kind of kept distracting her with colours and markers and magazines and, you know, trying to keep it all very light. And even coming home from Dublin, and I crying in the front seat, when I'd wipe away the tears and look back and give her this big smile as if to say, everything is so fine, you know. Mm. She was singing away in the back of the car, like had no idea what was going on. And then it was just this, you know, this no talking, this real, it was just the journeys were so hard, like, you know.
But the crazy thing about it was you were probably carrying the weight of the world on your shoulders because you were keeping a secret nearly.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You were trying to save your child from hearing any bad news and you were carrying the whole lot, yourself and Ollie.
Yeah. When we came home from hospital the first night and even when we came down from Dublin after the biopsy, we weren't even able to talk. We'd just get to the stage where we'd get her to bed and we'd just hug and cry and hug and cry. And you weren't able to get the words and the sentences out. Like, you know, it just brings it all back now, even course, just thinking about it. But, and then we'd have to find the moments to have the chats, the serious chats without her. You know, but yeah, of course, inquisitive and wanting to know what was going on. So we had to keep it light.
Yeah. And how was she digesting, obviously, when you were filtering information to her, maybe in a different way, in a lighter way? Was she absorbing all this information? Was she digesting the whole lot and saying, okay, Mom, okay, Dad?
She was, yeah. And have to say, she was very good about it. You know, we just kind of kept saying, you know, you're a medical mystery. They don't know, you know, they have to figure out what's wrong with you. And but you look at her, these trips to Dublin, great. And you know, we, out of convenience, we'd stay in a hotel maybe the night before or the night after. And she loved that. She's her mother's daughter.
Of course.
That's what Ollie would say. She's her mother's daughter.
I love it.
She loved that, and that took away from the,
So then obviously you got the diagnosis and it was a tumour on the tibia. First of all, was there treatment that they were hoping to use initially before we talk about amputation? Were they telling you that there was a possibility that you could look after this through treatment?
We came home knowing that it was a tumour and we had to wait for this phone call. We had to wait for the haematology report, and we had to wait for this phone call from Dr. Michael Capper, who was our oncologist. And he rang us and introduced himself to us and told us that he was so sorry to tell us that this was the case, that what Saoirse was diagnosed with was osteosarcoma,
okay,
which was a rare life-threatening tumour. And if I can remember correctly, it affects maybe 3 children in Ireland every year under the age of 16. So like, it was like, what? I mean, I'd never even heard of it. Now I'm hearing about all these types of sarcomas, do you know?
Yeah.
So he kind of ensured us at the time that there would be a plan put together and there would be some form of treatment. Ollie, of course, having been through cancer, chemo, surgery, we kind of knew what was might be ahead. So we went to Dublin, we met him. Saoirse met him, they struck up a great relationship. And then like that again, you know, his nurse was there, she was lovely, and she stayed with Saoirse and we were brought into another room. So, you know, it's always...
Another consultant's room, yeah. Yeah,
it's yeah, more bad news. But,
of course, yeah.
And sheltering her all the time. And it was when we went into that room, it was late one evening. He was discussing, filling up forms and asking us questions, and he was discussing the treatment plan and how she would start on chemo. And, she, you know, in the end, she was on chemo for 9 to 10 months.
Mm.
Nothing was said about an amputation.
Okay.
Until... You know, we had our questions and it was kind of, it felt like, should I even ask that question? Is that going to be a stupid question to ask, you know? And we just did, Ollie just braved it up and said, is there any chance that she could lose her leg? And we were really expecting him to say, not at all. And he said, yeah, possibly.
Wow.
That just knocked us for 6, because that was a completely different other level.
Wow.
Do you know?
Yeah, it's big stuff. It's big stuff.
And it was left there, you know, that this, you know, we'll discuss this again. Right now, we kind of have to start her treatment. So this was the first week in December. And she started
Santa
her
Claus
treatment.
Was only around the corner.
Like. Yeah, oh, stop running.
You
it
know.
Was. It was such a hard, emotional Christmas. The people that around us were so good to us. I'll never forget. She had come home. She had come home from her first chemo. She'd lost an awful lot of weight. She was very, very sick. Everything was happening at the same time. The hair was starting to come away. It was just those initial first few weeks were really tough. We had to, you know, start cutting the hair.
Yeah.
Because it's very sore as it falls out, falls away. It gets very heavy and sore. So we had to try and cut it and cut it and cut it and, you know, get her a silk pillow and anything that would help her. A lovely friend of the family came into the house and gave her a real short cut. And it was a lot for Saoirse to take on because, you know, why are you doing this? You know, but anyway, that Christmas was amazing because when she did come home after the chemo, she ended up getting the flu and she ended up in UHG on the 23rd and she ended up in there for the whole Christmas. But just before... the 23rd, I think it might have even been on that evening. I can't remember dates now to be exact, Ronan, but the neighbours, we couldn't go see Santa.
Okay.
So we got a text from my neighbour and we came up here to the top window in our house and you could see the blue flashing lights coming and it was just amazing. It was Santa Claus and he came in the paddy wagon.
That's the place for him, yeah.
It was just fabulous. And he knew everything about Saoirse and everything about pharaohs. And he came in. I never thought I'd see Santa in my house. He came in and he sat down and he had great chat for everyone. And it was just lovely. And we have such fabulous, special memories of that, escorted by a very good friend who was a guard. And it was just lovely. And, you know, I think it might have been later on that night she ended up going in with a temperature and she was in then for the whole of Christmas, which was very, very tough.
It was, of course. And Christmas is such a special time for everybody to be around and to be together. And it's such an important time, of course. Then moving on through Christmas into the new year.
Mm.
So we're into 2020 at this stage.
Yeah.
What happened after that? What was the situation? Obviously, your little princess, 7 years old, like every other princess, you know, wanted to wear the outfits and the hair was gone at this stage. Yeah. How was she at this stage? How did she feel?
She kind of, do you know, she adjusted very quickly to the hair going, but it was the initial reaction telling her when she'd started her first chemo, that's when we had to tell her that it would be a side effect, because I think it's in the first 14 days the hair would fall out. So we had to tell her.
Okay.
She reacted like anyone would react, like you or I think, you know, she lashed out and, you know, we were telling her that she had a tumour then. You know, the way we were kind of shielding her initially. Then we were able to tell her she had a tumour because she had no idea what a tumour was. We couldn't mention the C word.
No.
Because only a couple of weeks previous, someone in the neighbouring parish had died from that, and she had noticed the mass booklet. Ollie had gone to the funeral and she'd noticed the mass booklet on the table, and she asked me what happened to him. And I explained to her that he had cancer, and she told me that she felt very sorry for his family. So I couldn't mention at that stage, you know, so we used tumour for as long as we could, and then we had to sit down and tell her you've cancer, and that was traumatic. And then we had to tell her she was going to lose the hair, and that was traumatic. But when it came to it actually happening, she was very good about it. You know, we got the wigs and all of that, and she chose to not wear them. She preferred to not wear them. Yeah, they're not the most comfortable things.
No.
Yeah. So she was heading back for her second chemo in January, and she was quite weak because she had this awful flu over the Christmas. We were trying to give her these shakes, and she was just throwing them back up. It was hard work. So then they had to get fitted for the peg feed.
Yeah.
And it was then in January when I met the consultant, and I was on my own, and Ollie was kind of saying, "Will you ask him what the story is with the leg?" You know. Mm. So I kind of just cornered him one day on the corridor, and it was a bit of a shock because, you know, it was like being told again for the first time. I just said, "Do you know what's the story?" You know, and he said, "Oh, I had to talk to the orthopaedic surgeon." And I said, "Is this definitely happening?" And he said, "Undoubtedly so." And
so it kind of consolidated.
Oh, it was definitely happening then, where it was a possibility weeks earlier.
And bear in mind, you were on your own at this stage.
I was on my own, and I had to relay that to Ollie over the phone and walk back into the room Saoirse was in her bed, and just be okay, you know. There was a lot of that. There's a lot of those days.
Wow.
So that was something. And then, you know, I mean, for me, I suppose I didn't want to believe it was ever going to happen. And I mean, she's great now, and Ollie always said, like, from the early days, from when we still didn't really know what it was, he used to say, "Look, as long as we get to keep her."
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and absolutely. It's so true. Like, we just want her.
Your daughter.
We're not, you know, some people are so unfortunate that they don't have a person, you know, but at least we have her. And she's living, you know, a very good life, thank God. But it's just, I suppose, the mammy in me was, I don't want that for her. That wasn't my plan. Like, this is not how it was meant to be, you know. And I worry still, obviously, and I have to be honest about that, because I think people think, you know, we're so good. But of course, behind it all, we worry. And I go to bed at night and I worry about her, and I worry about when she's older and the friends she'll meet. And I hope that they'll always be good to her. And I worry about when she meets someone. Hand in my heart, I really do. And I just worry for those days, but that's down the line.
It is, but I will say, and I'm not saying it just because I'm on a podcast here, but she's a fabulous young woman. Yeah. She really is. She's a lovely kid. She's just a fabulous personality, and she's like yourselves, to be honest with you. Now, the chemo at the time, did the chemo work? You know, before obviously the amputation kicked in, was the chemo working? Was it, obviously it was malignant cancer. Was it keeping it at bay? Was it pushing it back?
Yeah.
Was it retaining? Was it keeping it there?
Yeah. I know what you're saying, Ronan. She had to have the chemo, but she was going to have the amputation anyway.
Regardless,
because of where it was. There was a lot of talks that went on with the orthopaedic surgeon and the oncologist. And even though we didn't like what we were hearing, Ollie was adamant to get a second opinion. He spoke to our local GP, John Kilrain, And he kind of pointed him in the right direction of where he could go for a second opinion. And between them, they decided that they'd get one in Massachusetts. And all along, like, I was doing the chemos in Dublin and Ollie was working and he was trying to do this background information. And, you know, I was sending the paperwork down to him and he was sending it off. And unfortunately, Massachusetts came back with the same opinion that it would have to be amputation, that limb sparing surgery would not work just because of the location. And they came up and they took as much as they could. They came up a good bit just, you know, to in order to prevent regrowth and just to ensure that it was gone, I suppose.
So when did the amputation happen?
The amputation happened, would I be right, Ronan, in saying that did we go into lockdown on the 17th of March?
We sure did. Very close.
Yeah.
That speech that we'll all remember for the rest of our lives.
We were in on a different ward in Crumlin because now we were under orthopaedics. And we watched his speech from the hospital bed, and that was the 17th of March. So we drove up that day. There was no celebrations, no Paddy's Day or anything. We drove up that day and she had her surgery the next morning, the 18th of March.
Okay. It was that quick. It was just...
Yeah, it was. It was, yeah, it really was. Yeah.
Now, initially, after that, obviously, ye had to deal with this. It's a visual thing, let's be honest with you. It's a visual.
Yeah.
She had to deal with it. Yeah. As at this stage, she was 8 years old. Would I be right in saying that? She was 8 years old.
Yeah.
When she obviously woke up from the operation and when you met her for the first time or whatever, what was the initial feeling? How did she deal with it? How did she deal with it?
It was meant to be a 4-hour surgery. So because of the situation with COVID and lockdown, there wasn't really anywhere to go. And we just went back to Ronald McDonald House and waited to be told that she was back. And when she came back, she was, you know, a little bit sedated or whatever. So we just gave her time to wake up and come around. And she was just going in and out of sleep for a long time. But she was hooked up to all kinds of things. And I don't think either of us were prepared to go looking for what was left. But, you know, as the nurses were coming in and checking on her and, you know, doing their obs, kind of slowly began to see what was happening. And I suppose it's hard, like it's very hard to, like, as I just say, we sent her down to theatre with 10 toes.
Yeah.
She, I couldn't understand how she was only going to come back with 5. So.
It was a difficult one.
It was, but we didn't actually look at the wound that evening. We didn't look. There was no need for us to, and we didn't want to. And Ollie left then because only one of us was allowed to stay there. And Ollie left to go back to Ronald McDonald House, and I was sleeping in the room with Saoirse. And Ollie wasn't long gone. I couldn't believe it when Saoirse, you know, said to me, "I'm so glad I got rid of my leg, Mama. Now I got rid of my cancer." And I just, you know, we're still amazed at 8 years old, and how does she get that? Like,
I just think the thing about it is, let's just be honest with you, is that's the real definition of the resilience of a child, isn't it?
Yeah,
phenomenal stuff, like the strength that's in there, yet the innocence. Do you know? It's
my
unbelievable.
Gosh, like, there was no grief. There was no from her now. There was no, you know.
The problem was taken away nearly.
Yes, yeah. She was coming up with the positive side on it. You know that. Well, my cancer's gone, so this is fine now.
Yeah.
You know, and the following morning she was out and she was doing physio. And we were gone home again within 3 days because they were happy to let us bring her home if we were. And we didn't really want to be in a hospital setting any longer.
Yeah.
You know, with what was going on.
You had enough.
Yeah, and we just, you know, infection and that. We just kind of wanted to just get home, so... But yeah, I mean, I think the lead up to it was harder. And even when she was down in surgery, that was just so hard. But the other side of it wasn't too bad because I suppose we were running off her attitude and she was just so positive.
And speaking of positivity, like, you know, she's, let's put it this way, let's move on from there, obviously. And you had to deal with the obstacles that were ahead of her. Obviously, she was sitting in a wheelchair for quite a long time.
Yeah.
probably finding it hard to get from place to place around here in the house, and you were dealing with that, and she was dealing with that. Ollie, of course, and little Farrah Rose was growing up in the middle of all of this as well. She's a great little character, that lady. But obviously, she grew up not knowing any different.
No,
like her sister is exactly her sister there.
She doesn't. You know. I often catch Farrah Rose looking at Saoirse when she's taken on or off her leg, and she just kind of looks innocently as a child stares, but she still doesn't know that that's not normal. That's Saoirse.
That's my sister.
That's Saoirse, and there's nothing funny about that. Like, yeah, yeah, it's gas. But someone had said to me about a year and a half ago, like, and it's so true, you know, that Farrah Rose healed Saoirse. Like, really, I do believe it, that she, in between all the chemos, when we came home, like, we're such a tight-knit family. Mm. And leaving here was so hard on a Sunday evening. And coming home was just as emotional. But Farrah Rose brought such joy to Saoirse, and it was just great to have her here, you know. Mm.
She was like a walking amusement park.
Yeah. She's walking it for 9.5 months, so she was just always mad for road.
She's fantastic. No, she's great fun in all fairness. And, you know, she is wonderful. And it is amazing how, because even at that, when my dad passed on, I was 18, I had a sister 13 and a sister 3 when my dad passed on at the age of 45. That 3-year-old, in my opinion, and I say this to this day, got us through that time of bereavement.
Wow.
Because she was 3, she was innocent.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I do feel that when you do have that focal point, if you want to call it that, and you get the giggle and you get the laugh of them jumping up on the couch or doing crazy things, it takes you through things.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I have often said that, you know, so it is definitely the therapeutic side of it, of having the innocence of a child doing crazy things in front of you. Now, obviously, I've been keeping an eye on you through social media, yourself, Saoirse and Mama and the singing and the whole shooting caboodle, which is absolutely fantastic and we all love it. But before I want to go on to that and the positivity of moving forward and how Saoirse has literally moved on so positively over the years, or over the year and a half at this stage, it feels like a long, long time, but it's not really that long at all. Mm-hmm. The Cancer Society, I know, means an awful lot to you.
Yeah.
And I know they gave you and Ollie a huge help at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Both, I suppose, a kind of a shoulder to cry on,
mm-hmm.
and obviously financially if you needed it or whatever the case may be at the time. Tell me what they mean to you.
But like you were saying there now, Ronan, you know, one of the first early days when we had to meet with the social worker, and, you know, I had spoken to my workplace about not being able to return to work, and the money wasn't there. I didn't have time to worry about that. I knew I had to be in Crumlin, and that nothing else was an option. I never forget the social worker saying to me, now here, you know, she did all the questions and the paperwork, and she said, now, the Irish Cancer Society give every family a little grant, I think is what she said, and I don't even remember, you know, at the time it was, could have been 1400, 1500, and she handed this to me, and I thought, oh my God, it was like someone gave me €1 million. I just thought, wow, and I burst out crying because I felt like, oh God, why am I in this situation? This is just, and yet, look at someone's given us something to help us try and get on, and it was just amazing. And Avian's Pink Tie was another then, and you know that gave something, and that's what they do for every family, and a lot of fundraising goes into that. And I just remember thinking, whenever, and I thought it would be years down the line, I said, whenever I'm in a position, I'm going to give back. So we didn't realise we'd be in a position as soon as we were. But I suppose when we got the figures from Ottobock, Ireland, where Saoirse attends for her prosthetics, and realised that because a child is still growing till they're about 16, she'd need 2, if not 3 prosthetics a year. And then, of course, it does depend too on if you're like, you know, like Saoirse now with the camogie, or if you are a professional runner, you'd need different types. And we knew that we'd have to have modifications done. We had nothing, only stones around the house. We'd moved into our beautiful house in 2017 and we'd no groundworks really. It wasn't appropriate for her in a wheelchair. I remember having to wheel her out the drive backwards in the wheelchair just to go for a walk on the main road. So there was a lot of that we needed to kind of fix. So we just said, and now, Ronan, we thought long and hard about this. And even when the GoFundMe was ready to go, we were going to pull it. Because we just kind of, it was COVID. People were losing their jobs. It was like, God, this is this, you know, are we asking too much of people? So we set it for, I think it was 5,000 euro. And I said to Ali, if we get 500 euro, won't that be something? And that's what we did. We set it for the 5,000. And I think in 45 minutes, we'd reached our target.
45 minutes?
Yeah. And then we spoke to them in Kappa and we found out the real figures that were going to be involved in keeping her in prosthetics and all the rigmarole with medical cards and how you're not guaranteed anything. So we said, okay, we're going to have to come back and explain to everyone on GoFundMe that, you know, this is what's ahead of us. And we put in our figure for 160,000, which would see her through prosthetics alone. And we started fundraising and, yeah, we kept fundraising. I think it was the April we'd set it up. And I think by June, July, we reached our target.
Wow.
And we couldn't believe it. And sure, you know, all you want to do is give back, give back, give back. So we kind of decided then that, you know, we'd give back something out of the excess to all the people that helped us along the way. And that's what we did. Whether they wanted it or not, that's what we were going to do.
It.
Yeah, because we were in a position to do that. And I always feel anyway, what you put out, you get back.
Well, even the, you know, the summer sessions, Saoirse's summer sessions as well. What a fabulous.
That was amazing.
It was.
But I still feel that's a pure pinch me moment. Codaline headlined it.
Yeah.
Like, did that really happen?
It did. And I'll tell you why it happened. Obviously, you were in a bubble. Because you had to deal with your daughter, you know, the new arrival and yourself and Ollie and the family and everything else that goes along with it. But outside the bubble, which I was, I think it touched an awful lot of people. Saoirse touched a lot of people.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think her story, your story, you were the average family who moved into what is an absolutely glorious house. And it's lovely to be here with you today. It's an honour to be here. It's a beautiful place. But I think everybody kind of went, that could be us. Mm. We could be exactly there. And they probably empathised with you and said, we're going to do as much as we can to help.
Yeah.
Because they feel that they could have been here too. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm not surprised that people went behind that and got behind you, because I think they really empathised with that. Now, moving on, obviously there's been so much wonderful stuff. You know, Saoirse obviously was on, got going on the bike, which was a huge time. But I think the most important thing is, let's go back to the time where she got the prosthetic to start to walk, yeah, which was the first time pretty much that her independence as such was restored, yeah, and she got an opportunity to move again,
yeah,
and to move freely. What was that like for you, for Ollie and for Saoirse?
Huge. Like, I can't even describe it, because when you think back, Ronan, when she went into hospital on the 29th of November 2019, she came home on crutches, and she was on crutches until she got her first prosthetic, which was November, a year later.
Yeah.
So she had a whole year of crutches, and with the leg and then without the leg. Oh, it was just amazing. Like, she worked so hard, and there was a lot of physio. And just to give her that independence back again. But, you know, the best one for me, really, I have to mention, was when the tarmac adam was done around the house. That was a big thing, because, you know, the way kids can go out and they can play, they can puck a hurley around on stones. Mm. You don't need your flat surface. And it, you know, to tear the grounds was, oh God, going to be years down the line. And, you know, it wasn't a priority. But my father actually, and not many people would know this now, he approached us and said that he wanted to do that for Saoirse because he's her godfather.
Oh, lovely.
Her grandfather and her godfather. And I couldn't believe it, because he came through Ollie. He rang Ollie one day and said, this is what's happening now, and there'll be someone there next week, and the tarmac adam will be done for you. And it was just one of those amazing moments that in all of, yeah, this. And that meant an awful lot to me, because once the tarmac adam was set and we were able to use it, I let her out the back door one evening on her wheelchair, and she just gave one push to the wheels and off she went.
Off she went.
And I just thought, oh, look at that for freedom. You know, she can go around the house there now all she wants, and we can get out to the road so much easier. And,
yeah,
you know, that was just one of those amazing things. then of course the leg came, and you know, the practicing with the two crutches, one crutch, no crutch. And, you know, she'd hop around there now if she'd no prosthetic on. She'd, you know, she's a tough, like.
I'd say she'd be well able to go. She's great.
She's lost it in school a couple of times, you know. the clip would come out and she'd, you know, and her friends would be coming around her going, Saoirse, will I get the teacher? And she'd be laughing away going, not at all in grand.
And even in school, obviously, you know, she's a very independent young woman. How did she get on with friends? As in, how did everything kind of... Did the friends kind of rally around her at the time where obviously she had lost the leg initially? Was there contact, you know?
There was contact from outside, like the same way like Ronan, whereas all our family were even outside and they couldn't get into us because of COVID.
Yeah.
The whole way through. I think the last time I sat down with my family was the February, the month before she lost her leg, and it was to tell them all face to face that this is what was going to happen. And we could never see anyone after that then. Like, we might have had Mam and Dad and Ollie's mother into the house, but we'd have them in the porch and we'd be in the kitchen. You know, we took our precautions because of Saoirse going through the chemo. The friends were there through the mums texting, and they'd send little videos, and they sent her lovely, you know, a signed jersey from the Camogie. And oh, in fairness, they did a lovely drive-by. And
yeah, spotted the drive-by on social media. That was so special.
That was amazing.
It went on forever.
It did. That's what I thought as well. I was like, it was brilliant. Cares? It was amazing. And yeah, such a high. And that was the day I realised what community spirit was about.
Yeah. And it's like that since, really, you know, because she has brought a community with her too.
Yeah.
And I think with Saoirse and Mama as well, I absolutely love your pieces as well, when the two of you sing, and even bringing in Farrah Rose made a movement there last week or the week before as well. So it was lovely to see that. Continued success to yourself and Ollie, Farrah Rose, of course, and wonderful Saoirse. She's a great kid, very resilient, and a tough story. A tough story, but...
A nightmare, yeah. Ronan, but yeah. You know what? We cannot believe we are out the... Well, we're coming out the other side. That's what I do say. We're coming out the other side. We have a lot to be grateful for. We're very lucky to have her. And, you know...
And is she medicine-free now, as in when it comes to the likes of the, say, the cancerous side of things?
Yeah.
Is she on precautionary medicine or no, perfect?
No, she's finished the chemo. She was weaned off the... medication that she would be on for phantom pains. You know, you should ask Saoirse about that, actually, because she can feel the toes on the leg that's not there anymore.
Really?
It's the most unusual thing, but it's quite fascinating. And, you know, you can get a bit of phantom pain afterwards, and it's there. The pain is there because it's obviously the nerves in the brain. There's nothing to scratch or itch because it's gone.
Yeah.
So she was weaned off all of that. And what we do now is every 4 months she's monitored closely. She's x-rayed and we meet with our consultant, and they will do that for as long as they need to.
Yeah. So she was only up last week. Was it Emma? Did you see a name? Emma?
Emma's our new lady. Yeah.
Yes.
Emma's
yeah.
our new girl. We met her for the first time last Monday.
Was that for a fitting of the actual leg, or was it to do with her blade, this cool new blade that we're talking about?
Yeah, so it was to check the current prosthetic that she has, which I'm nearly thinking she's nearly outgrown. You know, that's how quick it can come about. She got that last June. It all has to do with her height and, you know, growth spurts and that. Shoes as well, if you think about it, Ronan, like if she wants to go buy a new pair of shoes. So her left leg, which is always been there, you know, if she has to go up a shoe size in that foot, then the prosthetic has to change.
Of course it does, yeah.
So there's lots of this. Like, I mean, it's fascinating, really. And then inside the leg is a liner. That's like €1,000. And it just goes on like a sock. It's mad. So she was up to check the current one. And she also got approved for the blade, which is a huge thing because she... You know, I would often show her on social media, someone else maybe, Amy Purdy in America. She's amazing. She's a double amputee. She's stunning. And I would say, look at Amy's design, or look what she's up to now. But Saoirse should be very wary that I don't show her wounds or scars or anything like
that. Yeah, that's a private thing.
Of course, yeah. And she doesn't want to see this in other people either. Like, you know, obviously she's only 10. So from that, you know, she'd be kind of going, oh, I don't know about the blade. And then we went and met the lovely Alex Lee in Galway. He met us on the track, and she was very impressed by him. he let her race her and everything. It was brilliant. And kind of after that, she came to us and said, "Oh no, I'm not getting another prosthetic now. Next time I'm going to go for the blade. You know, I'm not getting your normal one." And I thought that was huge. You know, that's huge because aesthetically it's unusual to look at. So that's what she was up getting a cast for the last day. And that'll definitely help her with camogie and any sports that she does.
That's fantastic. It really, really is. Well, look, I'll have a little chat with her now. She's knocking about and we'll finish off that conversation with her then.
Perfect.
No problem. We're just after inviting Saoirse into the conversation. Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm great.
Good stuff. Look, thanks a million, and it's great to see you, and you're happy out, and you have the prosthetic here in front of us, and the whole shooting caboodle, and a lovely sock on it, and what's that cool thing that you have in the front of it?
Oh, that's a husky.
That's a husky. Do you love huskies?
Yes.
Are they your favourite type of dog? Do you have a husky?
No.
No. Do you want a husky?
Yeah.
I can't give you one, I'm sorry, I was only asking you anyway. Now, talk to me about this phantom toe thing that Mam had a little chat about, and I know you're kind of squinching your face up at the moment. Tell me, what's going on with that?
I can still wiggle my toes and cross my toes and do all that sort of stuff.
And does it feel a little weird?
A little. But like, it feels like I'm wiggling my normal toe.
Right, okay. And does it happen regularly or just now and again? You might be sitting down watching a bit of TV. When does it happen or how does it happen?
Well, my brain kind of thinks it's still there, so I can kind of do it on and off, so I can be like, I'm wiggling it right now. But it doesn't really happen like out of the blue.
Very good. And right, let's move on a small little bit and we talk about, you have your prosthetic on at the moment. You're talking about a blade possibly next time, are you?
Yeah.
Tell me about this cool blade.
Well, we were thinking of getting the blade because it would be better for when I'm going to camogie. Because when I'm at camogie, sometimes my leg gets sore a bit easier. And then if I got the blade, it would kind of give me more of a bounce when I'm running.
Yeah, and I suppose the blade would be slightly lighter as well, probably as you're running around. So you'd be faster and getting the ball off all those ladies. Is that the way it is?
Yeah.
Brilliant, brilliant. Right, okay, so the best of luck with that. That'll be happening hopefully over the next little while. Is there a time frame on that-ish?
May.
May, brilliant. Just in time for the summertime.
Yeah.
That's brilliant, so that's great. Now, the Late Late Toy Show. You became a national, if not international, figure during the Late Late Show of 2020 when Ryan Tuberty brought on a wonderful young lady to have a chat about her journey of losing a leg. And you set up this wonderful Late Late Toy Show appeal. Talk to me about that.
Well, it was not expected, no. I just went on stage and then he was like, "Let's talk about you, not the toys. You're more important."
Yeah, there you go. So Ryan Tuberty brought you on. You had a chat. Of course, yourself and Mom had a chat. And once again, you opened up the hearts of the people of Ireland, in my opinion, because I was sitting at home with my little boy and my little girl watching it. And seemingly the toy show went absolutely wild where people wanted to contribute to the toy show appeal. And how much did they raise?
I think it was like 6 million, 6 point something, yeah. I think.
Yeah. It was a serious, serious amount of money. And that was all, let's put it this way, apart from the toy show, that was all because of you. Did you know that?
Kind of.
Yeah, brilliant. But it was fantastic. And you have, along with your mom and everybody else, have done so much for so many families in Ireland to do with cancer. And how are you getting on since? Say for instance, you've gotten rid of the crutches. They're gone. They're done. Yeah. They're dusted. They're dust someplace.
They're
I don't know where they're
in my room.
Oh, are they? But you don't need, you don't need them though, do you?
I used them on the weekend.
Oh. Is it because you wanted to or because you needed to?
She's too lazy.
I don't know.
On her leg sometimes.
So you said I'd throw it on anyway and see how, yeah. Throw them on and see how you get on. So you use them the odd time just to let them know that they're still there.
Yeah.
Brilliant. So that's cool. And obviously we followed your journey on social media. And when you first started walking, I was talking to Mom about that a little earlier on. But what I want to get into is the bike. It was just a normal bike.
Yeah.
So nothing was modified on this bike at all. Oh, wow. That's so cool. And I remember when you took off and they were kind of going, come back. So, did you find that a really cool time to say, right, I have a bike, I'm flying it here?
Yeah. I was a bit nervous because since like I was only kind of like, a few months after my operation, I felt weird on the bike because I was thinking I was going to fall off because I had my prosthetic.
Yeah.
And I felt all weird and I was like, I don't want to do this.
And did you feel that you were a little bit imbalanced? Because obviously you had your leg on one side and then the other side was prosthetic. You were kind of going, did it feel a little bit iffy and woozy?
Yeah.
But it didn't take you long to get into it. You're flying around the place since. So that's absolutely brilliant. And what else have you planned along the line? So you have the bike thing done. Yeah. Camogie's next. What's after that?
Disneyland.
Disneyland. Hopefully. Disneyland. Now, this is a wonderful prize, correct? Mm-hmm. That you got from the Late Late Show with Ryan Tuberty.
Mm-hmm.
And you're thinking about going when? I know that you're thinking one thing. Mom is thinking another thing. So when do you want to go, Saoirse?
Tomorrow.
Well, tomorrow can't happen, right? You have no bags packed, so you can't go tomorrow. But hopefully soon you'll be able to head off there and see all those lovely characters that you want to hear. When you heard it on the Late Late Show that you were heading to Disneyland, what did you feel?
I don't know, because like I've heard of Ryan Tuberty giving gifts, but I was like, nah, it won't beat me. I won't get one. Just like trying not to get my hopes up, just in case I did. Just in case I didn't. I mean, I don't know. I was like, this is my dream.
It's your dream. The lovely thing about it is the dream is still very much alive because the tickets are still there and they're ready to go at some stage. So great. And even apart from Disneyland, have you any other things? I know you play the harp. I'm looking at it here, a beautiful harp to my right hand side. So music is a big passion of yours, as is your mom, of course, here. What job would you like to do in the future?
I'd like to be a nail artist.
A nail artist?
Yeah.
I love it. Here you go. There's mine. Off you go. And the best of luck with that. Although they're not great. Us men's nails are not as nice as yours. And your hair is absolutely beautiful now as well. And was it always curly?
Yeah, it was. It came back exactly the same way.
Yeah, it came back
the
same way.
There's a few different colours in it though now.
There is. There's a bit of red in it. A bit of chestnutty red,
Yeah, where did that come from? What side is that?
Well, there's a bit in both, actually. Ollie's father was red-haired. And, I have a sister who's Auburn.
Excellent.
So, yeah.
So, well, I wish you continued success. It's amazing watching your journey, Saoirse, along the line of the shy little 7-year-old that I remember from day one, up to this cool dude that's here in front of me now, mad about nail art and everything else going along with it, getting blades and everything else and playing the harp and on her bike and the whole lot. Have you a new friend that we're supposed to know about?
Tell her what you've been up to.
I went up to Dublin to meet Brezzy.
Niall Breslin?
Yeah.
Wow, and what happened there? Tell me about that.
We went up to record, like, kind of, we didn't record a song, kind of.
You did, yeah, you recorded a song, but
it was already sung.
Released yet, yeah.
And
a cover.
Yeah, a cover of a song.
In his studio.
In his studio.
That's fantastic. He's in a great band called The Blizzards. They're class. They really are class. And tell me about Variety. What is this thing that you did with Variety? Was that last July?
Yeah.
What happened there?
You're the...
Oh, yeah, I'm the child ambassador for Variety.
Ooh, excuse me. Wow, all these ambassadorships. Wow, this is fantastic.
I feel so special.
That's because you are special. That's the reason why. You're very, very special indeed. And you've gone through a heck of a journey. And I was, again, looking at social media. I think it was a week and a half ago, Mom, you were probably feeling quite nostalgic because you put up pictures the whole way up along the line of obviously from day one and the loss of the hair and times in the hospital and times out of the hospital. I think you were going through, I kind of felt that you were going through a nostalgic time to where you are now and this wonderful young lady in front of you. Mm-hmm. I'm sure flashbacks come now and again.
Yeah, like we'd be very aware of particular days, dates, you know, and then childhood cancer awareness days. And, you know, we try to post and create awareness. Very much about that, create awareness for childhood cancer and limb loss. And I know, you know, you can say there's no point looking back because you're going forward, but sometimes you have to look back to see how far you've come.
Of course, I think it kind of makes the person too, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And you're an extremely strong and resilient young lady, but she's as strong as an ox,
she's
isn't
great.
She?
Yeah,
she's good fun.
Yeah.
You're good fun. You make me giggle. And that's good too. Look, at Saoirse, I want to wish you the best in all the stuff that you're doing in the future. And to you, Rosanna, of course, and to Ollie and to Farrah Rose, who's a bundle of fun jumping around the place there a while ago as well with Anna and Elsa and everything else to go along with it. So thanks a lot for taking the time. Thank you very much indeed for inviting me into your seriously cool home. Really cool home. I don't want to leave. But anyway, that's another day's work. So thanks a lot. Enjoy. And we'll talk to you soon, okay?
Thanks, Rowan.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Rowan Story. The next podcast will be available April the 21st.